We were talking in our last study about the 19th chapter of Genesis, the story of Lot. And as I mentioned, we know from 2 Peter chapter 2 that Lot was a just man. Here's a child of God who in life is compromised. And I think that's important because it's possible to be a real believer and still to be in many ways conformed to the world. It's possible to be compromised. Now, we read about Lot, that he sat in the gate. He was acceptable to the heathen community down there. And it's an awful story, but it's right here in the Bible. Lot, you see, had welcomed these visitors and prepared a feast for them. And then the men of the town come to beat down the door to take these men for immoral purposes. And this is where the word sodomy originated, you see. And Lot does something that just is offensive to us. He said to these men, "Well, you can have my daughters." Now, we at least know the reason for this. In that culture, when you ate with a stranger or anybody else, you bound yourself to him. We have exactly a parallel story in the book of Genesis, where a man offered a young lady so that his visitor wouldn't be harmed. And you say, "We wouldn't do anything like that." I wonder about what Christian parents do when they send their daughters to the wrong places. But the thing I'm concerned about just now is that Lot was conformed to culture. We can do this in the way we spend our time. And if we spend our time in conformity to the world, with wrong movies, wrong TV programs, wrong books, we'll end up with the wrong lifestyle, the wrong values, the wrong way of thinking. And then the way this part of the story is going to end is when these men in Sodom are trying to break down the door, the angels are going to pull Lot back in and blind these men, so that they can't even find the door. And they're going to say to Lot, "Now look, it's time to get you out of here because God's going to destroy this place." And so they ask Lot if there are any other folks beside the immediate family that he should take with him. And we're told that Lot visits his sons-in-law. Now, the Hebrew word may mean these young men who were promised to marry his daughters. And he said, "Up, get you out of this place. The Lord will destroy the city." Lot believed what these men of God told him. Oh, yes. And the sad verse, it's verse 14 of chapter 19, says he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. The folks in the family circle, when Lot had something serious to say about God's judgment, just took it for granted that it was a big joke. I don't think you can find a sadder verse than that in this part of the Bible. Here's a man who deep down in his heart really believes in God. He's called Righteous Lot, Just Lot, over in the book of Peter. Yes, but when the in-laws heard him talking about God and God's judgment, they just took it for granted. It was a big joke. And the more he played with them, the more they laughed. Oh, and there's no record of their ever coming out. Well, the angels finally take them by the hand, at least Lot's wife and the daughters, and just lead them out of the city. Because they say, "We'll destroy this place. God's going to do it through these angels." And they start off, and Lot asks permission to stay a while in a little city. In fact, the name of it, Zoar, means the little place. And we're told here, and this is the part that's usually remembered, Lot's wife looked back. This shows where her heart was. She didn't want to leave Sodom. That was home to her. She'd gotten used to it, and evidently she loved the place. And she looks back, and it simply says she turned to a pillar of salt. Now, did she turn to a pillar of salt just immediately, miraculously? Very possibly. Does it mean that the fumes overcame her? Did the burning asphalt that was falling hit her while she was turned around looking back? And did she become a pillar of salt because the spray and the mist covered her? Now, the reason for thinking that is a possibility is that there are all kinds of things down in that valley that have been turned to salt just from the spray that comes off of the Dead Sea. And after a while, it gets to be a pillar. It gets to be in the shape of whatever started it. But whether God did it just instantaneously, this was God's judgment upon this person. So many folks just don't like this part of the Bible. Some folks just don't want to hear about judgment, just like three-year-olds don't want to hear about spanking. And I remember this was in a place called Kingsport that many of you will recognize over here in East Tennessee. There was a preacher there some years ago. I won't call his name. But he had a sermon which he called God Kills People. And I remember when I first heard that, I didn't like it at all. I just didn't. It sounded too cold to me. Yes, but we had the story of the flood. God judges. And there are a dozen other stories in the Bible about God's judgment. It may not be the kind of title just to attract people, but you'd have a hard time saying to this preacher that he'd missed the point. I don't think he had. God judges Sodom. Now, when they got out of town, Lot's going to stay for a while, a little while, in the city of Zoar. And as I mentioned, the word Zoar means little. And then he went up on the mountain and lived in a cave. Well, now, what he ought to have done was to have gone to his uncle Abraham on the basis of the relationship that they had had. Abraham brought him to that part of the world. He didn't do that. You see, they'd separated because they had such large herds and flocks that there wasn't enough grass for them to stay in the same part of the country. But Lot just goes up to a cave with his two daughters. Now, if this weren't right here in this chapter 19, I wouldn't mention it. But here's the story of these girls who were brought up in Sodom and had picked up the thinking of the people, probably the young people in Sodom. They're living in the cave now, and they can see down in the valley where Sodom and Gomorrah used to be. And these girls decide, well, we don't have a man to marry, so let's get Daddy drunk, and we'll let him be the father of our children. Now, that's what they did. They got a lot drunk on two different nights, and these daughters became the mothers of Moab and Ammon, heathen peoples that were a trouble to God's people for hundreds of years to come. Here's what happens to young people who are brought up in a non-Christian environment. Here's why parents need to be so careful about the associates of their children, where they'll learning, what they are learning, and things like that. These two daughters of Lot grew up in Sodom, and they had the thinking and the ethical patterns of the folks that they grew up with. Now, the next chapter tells that Abraham journeyed toward the south country. They moved around when they had sheep and cattle, these animals, because the grass pattern changed from season to season, and things like that. And Abraham's going about as far southward as you can go and still be in the Canaanite settlements. He's not going all the way back to Egypt now, but he's going in that direction, and he comes to a place called Gerar. And Abraham's going to fall down exactly in the way he stumbled before. The king of that part of the country is Abimelech, king of Gerar. And Abraham has said to this man, "Sarah is my sister." Now, you know, we've had that story before. This was the thing he tried in Egypt. And what this tells us is that people can be tempted to fall twice or seven times or whatever into the same sin. Here's a man of God who had faith. Here's a man of God who's left his home country and his family, Ur of the Chaldees. Here's a man who's really by faith waiting for God to fulfill his promises. Yes, but he stumbles at this point, and he tells these folks that Sarah is his sister. She's a good-looking woman, and he's afraid that these Canaanites will take her and kill him just to get rid of him if they find out that he is her husband. And as I mentioned once before, she was indeed his half-sister, and that was a proper marriage in the long ago. Just like when I was a little boy, it was still fairly common for first cousins to marry. Not now. This man's telling a part truth, but it's coming across as a bald lie. And this just tells us that God's people need to be careful about stumbling into old sins. Now, God's going to tell Abimelech in a dream. He'd taken Sarah. And Sarah had gone on with this too, evidently. And God's going to tell this man, you restore the man his wife and get him to pray for you. And so Abraham is called, and they said, "Hey, how come you pulled this on us? What hast thou done unto us?" And then Abraham said, "Well, I was afraid. I was afraid what would happen to me." And so he's going to explain, "Well, now, yes, she is my half-sister." And so Abimelech gives them a present and sends them away. Abraham, in the meantime, has prayed for these people, and God has taken away the affliction that had come upon them in judgment. You see, this man Abimelech wants to make a covenant with Abraham, and he does just this. Now, at this point, we're going to have the birth of Isaac in chapter 21. And Abraham's 99 years old, and of course he's very excited about this. What old man wouldn't be excited about having a son? And so the time comes when he's old enough to eat regularly, and they have a weaning party. Now, we wouldn't do that, probably, but that was a big thing with these folks in the long ago. And at this party, the older half-brother, Ishmael, begins to mock. He makes fun of the little half-brother, Isaac. And so, Sarah saw it, and she's angry, and she blames her husband. Well, simple fact of the matter is, it was her idea in the first place. But anyway, she blamed it on Abraham. And then Abraham's going to say, well, now she's your servant. You do with her what you want to do. And eventually God's going to tell Abraham not to be grieved because of the son, and to send them away, and that Ishmael will become a nation too. And so Abraham gives them provisions, and in chapter 21, Hagar and Ishmael are sent away. They're given their freedom and dismissed. And he gives them, of course, water and food, but the water gives out as they are traveling, and Hagar is afraid that Ishmael's going to die of thirst, and she sits down to cry, and God hears the voice of these two, and the angel comes and says, God's going to take care of you. It says God opened her eyes, and she saw that she was right close to a well. Is there a big lesson right here for us? There is such a thing as sitting down right in sight of the well, almost, and crying for water. Too many folks today that go to church are so close to the blessings of God, and yet they haven't really partaken of them. Anyway, when they, it says God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water and went and filled the bottle. And bottle means a skin, of course, and gave the lad drink. And God was with him, and eventually he's going to marry an Egyptian girl. That's right here in this chapter. Then there's a long section here about Abraham's relationship to Abimelech. There had been a disagreement about a well that Abraham had dug, and Abimelech's servants had just taken it away from him. And Abraham was going to straighten that out with Abimelech, and he's going to give Abimelech 7 ewe lambs. And this is in Eastern fashion. Abraham's going to make a big ceremony of setting apart these 7 lambs. And Abimelech's supposed to ask, and he does, what mean these 7 lambs? And Abraham says, they are a witness that I dug this well over here. And the point is that Abimelech's going to keep these lambs, and he'll see them. They probably a little different color, coming from a different flock. And every time he sees one of these 7 lambs, or the next generation of lambs, he's going to be reminded that Abraham really dug this well. And it says, thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. And so Abraham plants a tree there, or a grove. This is another covenant procedure. These people followed this betimes. The tree would remind people who saw it that it was a covenant tree. Sometimes we plant trees in our gardens that commemorate something in the family circle. Now, in the first part of chapter 22, we have a temptation that comes to Abraham. Temptation in the sense of a testing. Temptation in the sense of tempting. Abraham's going to be tempted to offer Isaac as a sacrifice. Now, we know from the Bible and other sources that in that part of the world, child sacrifice was a very common part of religion across Jordan and among some of the Canaanites. The Baal worshippers offered child sacrifice to Baal. It was strictly a heathen thing, an invention of man in his depravity, man going his own way. You know, the more the archaeologists dig up about these ancient heathen religions, the better we understand why the Old Testament continually warns against them. Now, in this chapter, Abraham, the father of the faithful, is tested in the sense that he is tempted to offer Isaac as a sacrifice. And so he makes the plans, he gets the wood, he takes the fire, they didn't have matches, and he takes Isaac and some servants, or a servant, and they go several days' journey. They come to a mountain. There's some folks think it was the same mountain on which Jesus was crucified. That may be. It was certainly right in that part of the country. Abraham says to the servants, the young men they're called, "You stay here, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship, and come again unto you. We'll come back." And Abraham takes the wood and lets Isaac carry it, and he has the knife and the fire. And Isaac's old enough to notice things, and he said, "But Daddy, where's the lamb?" And Abraham says, "God will provide himself a lamb." Now, you see, the writer of Hebrews is going to tell us that by faith, Abraham went through with this, believing that if he had to go the whole way and offer Isaac, that God was able to raise him up again. Here's a man that meets a difficult test. And so, just at the point when Abraham is ready to offer his son, God's voice stops him. And he notices that right close by, there's a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And the ram is offered up instead of Isaac. And so, this is a story of faith and obedience. A story of faith and obedience. The book of Hebrews, again, tells us that Abraham believed that God could raise up Isaac if he had to go all the way with it. Abraham calls this place Jehovah Jireh. The Lord will provide. And in some ways it reminds us of Good Friday, on which God, maybe right on that same spot, certainly on the same mountain ridge, God provided the perfect sacrifice for our sin, even Jesus Christ himself. Now, the next story that we have here is that Sarah is 127 years old, and Sarah passes away. And there's a long section here about Abraham's purchase of a cemetery. Machpelah was the name of a cave, and he bought a field that went with it down in southern Palestine, we'd say. And he goes to the sons of Heth, I think that means the Hittites, and he says, "I'm a stranger and a sojourner, and I want you folks to sell me a place to bury my dead." And this, incidentally, is a marvelous chapter about the customs of that day and time. Abraham asks these people if he can buy this cave for a cemetery, and they say, "Oh, yes, we'll just be glad to give it to you." And Abraham's going to say, "Thank you, but I must pay you for it." And they say, "Well, it's worth 400 units of silver. But what's that among us? You just go ahead and use it. That's perfectly all right." And then we're going to told that Abraham very carefully weighs out that much money. Well, it was a business deal all along, but they had to cover it with Eastern customs. It's hard for us to realize that folks in other parts of the world don't just go in the store and pick up things and pay exactly what the price is. I went to the grocery store this morning. I don't know how many items I got. I suppose 15 or 20. And I think I paid exactly to the penny what was written on each one of them. That's the way it's supposed to be. Yes, but I can remember in parts of Europe in World War II. Yeah, I'm talking about Europe now, where if you walked in and paid the full price, without dickering, without bargaining with these folks, you'd hurt their feelings. I'm talking about in modern times. And, of course, there was much more of this in the long ago. This was their custom. This was their procedure. This was the way they did things. And so we have here the story of how Sarah was buried, and this becomes the family burying ground. Here's the story of Abraham. Now, he's going to live on for some years, and he's going to plan for the marriage of Isaac in chapters that follow and things like that. But Abraham is remembered as the man of faith, the man who lived by faith, who sojourned year after year after year in the promised land, waiting for what God had promised. He's remembered as the man who was willing to go all the way, even to offer his son, when God was testing him. And we're told that the folks who have this kind of faith are really the children of Abraham. May it be true in your life and in mine that we'll have enough faith to walk with God all of our days, and that we'll have the faith to be obedient as Abraham was.